Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So, if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So, at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is, we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about the experimental job, and Sally Kilpatrick is back with me.
Hello, hello.
Hello. So the experimental job was the mid-season premiere. So they took a break from August, and it aired November 27, 2011. That is the day before my sister's birthday. It's actually my grandmother's birthday. Rest in peace, Grandma Cookie. And it was directed by Mark Roskin, our good friend of the show. And it was written by M. Scott Veitch. So in this episode, when a homeless vet dies under mysterious circumstances, the team goes to college to take down a member of a secret society that has powerful connections. Dun dun dun! And obviously, our secret society is based on
Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones, the very not secret secret society that even has a Paul Walker movie made about it. Rest in peace, Paul Walker.
Indeed, indeed.
Did you have any special reason for wanting to be on this episode?
I think I must have remembered something about it, and I couldn't remember it very well because I would have watched it in 2011 and not watched it since. But I know part of it was this was a date that I was available, but I know there was something about it when I looked at it. I think probably the order 206, order of 206. I'm totally messing that up.
I
Secret
think it's your birthday.
societies and then when I got into it, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. Yes, I love this. So it was kind of luck of the draw, but then too, I think some subconscious nudging. And I made an interesting observation, but I'm going to wait till we get to the end.
Ooh. Okay. I can't wait. So let's get started. We start up with this kind of upsetting scene. Like, if you're not expecting this, like, you there's a man in like kind of like a prison jumpsuit outfit, in a lot of distress, like freaking out, overturning a cot in like this tiny cell, and then
Looks
he
like a jail cell, and
looks exactly like a jail cell. He busts through this door and like stumbles out of this like prison set up into a very posh like frat party where no one asks him if he is okay or what is this man doing here. They just laugh at him and like kind of like, ew, gross. And
Is
then he
he
has a heart
homeless
attack. Yeah. Is he homeless?
anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, he has a heart attack, he dies, they say tasteless things, and then they dump his body off a bridge. And the thing that our main villain is most upset about is that he's not getting lucky tonight with someone whom his frat brothers call berserker tits.
Yes, Berkowitz, Berserker tits. I can't even say.
I didn't even catch that. I was like, what is the, I don't even want to know, but what's the story beside about with
Berserk? Yeah, it's like,
it's just a stupid.
Dudes, man. Dudes.
Oh, Bastardage. That's just a stupid version of her name. Wow.
Yeah, it was Berkowitz and then Berserker Tits. I can't even say it.
I wonder how many times they had to do that take. But it's a pretty illustrative scene, and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, I hate this boy.
I hate this,
all of these entitled
rich
frat boys. Like, yeah. In the commentary, it's so beautiful when John Rogers goes on his like eat the rich rants, which you would expect from someone who makes the show Leverage. But he's like, you know, we do have generational wealth. These people just get rich and they just are like funneled into rich things. They get richer. Their kids are rich. Like, you have a better chance of changing your social class in England, where it's a monarchy, than here in America. And everybody else in the commentary is like, yeah, yeah, John, we know, blah, 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 the rich, blah, 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 generational wealth.
And I'm going to go back and listen to the commentary just for the balm to my soul.
It's really good. And he brings it up again later. And they're like, mom. it's really good. And he's like, fine, I'm going to drink my scotch over here and seethe.
As one does. Drink my scotch and seethe.
They also decide, as they're jumping this poor man's body off a bridge, that they're going to move their entire experiment to the psych building, which is probably a better place to be holding a psych experiment and not the basement of your frat house.
One would think.
Yeah, one would think like an ethics board would have an issue with that.
Well, I did look that up a little bit, and the ethics board would actually have an issue with that, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah, the ethics board would have issues with like every experiment we see in this episode, yes. Whether or not bad guys are running it, which every bit of trivia that I came across mentioned this, everything yep. was like, nope, no. So like a young woman who turns out to be the daughter of the dead man, whose name is Shiver. I think it's David Shiver. I wrote it at the very end of my notes, but I'm not going to go back. Shivel. Oh,
okay.
Here we go.
Shivel. Okay. We're going to get Shivel. There. Terry Schiavo. Yeah. No, not that at all.
Yes. David Shivel. And she is his daughter. And she knows that he was taking part in this study at the university where they were going to study the sleep patterns of people with PTSD. And she's talking to Nate and Elliot, because obviously Elliot's going to have a big connection to this kind of scenario with like veterans and PTSD and issues like that. And you might have to like walk me through this, and I'm not quite sure if it's like it's a Leverage thing and we're going to have to wave our hands, like black box ledger situation. Because Elliot asks like, oh, your dad had PTSD. And she's like, yeah, just a little thing to remember Vietnam by.
Mm-hmm.
This girl had to be like 20 in 2011. Okay,
this was the moment I had too. I'm like, he looks like your grandpa.
Yeah. And like, it might have been a relationship much later after he came back, like a late in life kind of thing.
The prisoner guard experiment that this is somewhat based on was also mm-hmm. from before this time, as was the one we're going to get to with Parker. So I don't know if they went with Vietnam because it went with some of those experiments that were done.
Yeah, like the Stanford prison experiment. I don't know, but I was just like, they could have used like the Gulf War or something. Like, that would have been a little more.
Yeah, I mean, Elliot later refers to Iraq, so.
Yeah. So. But I mean, I like that this is, she says, the police have this photo of his body. They did an autopsy. He did die of a heart attack, but I know that they moved his body. I know that they caused his heart attack. And they just figured that because he was homeless, no one would care. But it's like, he's obviously not homeless because no one cares about him. He's homeless because he has mental health issues and he's not stable, but she still loves him and she still keeps up with him. And I think that's a really like an interesting angle on homelessness that we don't see a lot in the media.
And yet I think a little more truthful based on the few things that I've read. I am by no means an expert, but mm-hmm. I mean, a couple of the things that I've read, family members will kind of have some idea where their mothers, fathers, uncles, brothers, sisters, where they might be.
Yeah. Maybe not like day to day, but
yeah, just a general idea. Yeah. And I think that that's realistic and something I thought that was a nice touch too.
Yeah. I really liked that. The dates are weird, but that's, you know.
We're all going to roll with it. It's fiction.
Someone, my coworker today was on the phone and she was like, oh yeah, like it was like 10 years ago, 1998. Nope.
Nope.
Like, nope, that was a lot longer ago.
Nope.
So time is meaningless, especially right now.
Yeah, right now. Both my husband and my son have had to explain to me multiple times when certain things have occurred. And I'm just like, look, y'all, we're in quarantine. Time has no meaning. I don't know what day it is. I don't know.
I swear this weekend I looked at something that said, oh, we're having this thing today on the 15th. And I was like, oh, I guess it's the 15th. And then they were like, Saturday, the 16th. And then I saw something else that was like, it's the 17th. But now that I'm thinking about it, I think I saw that thing that said the 17th yesterday and not Saturday. See, because it doesn't mean anything.
I have to look at my phone on a daily basis. Between my phone and my bullet journal, that's the only hope I have right now.
And literally, like, we've been talking about, like, I go to work every day. So, like, you'd think, we're all like, it's Wednesday, right? God, no, it's just Monday. All right. Buckle up, everybody. I got five more days of this. So, yeah. But time aside, she's upset that her father's dead and she wants justice for him. But Nate is like,
this isn't really what we do.
And she's like, it's exactly what you do. What's wrong with you? Take down rich and powerful people who are covering up the murder of innocent people? Come on, Nate. And, you know, he looks at Elliot. And then, of course, they do it. Because we wouldn't have this episode if they didn't do it.
Absolutely not.
And Hardison,
this case,
yeah, Hardison does his, you know, he runs his slideshow, and we meet our baddie, whose name is Travis Zilgram, who I keep wanting to call Zach. And I went like 3/4 of the way through the episode writing his name as Zach, and then I was like, that's weird that his name is Zach Zilgram, and then I was like, no, his name's Travis, and I had to like control F and replace. So Travis Zilgram, which is a portmanteau of the names Milgram and Zimbardo, who were the you know, scientists behind the two cases that we'll talk about a little. The Stanford Prison Experiments was Zimbardo, I believe. And then the one that's...
can't remember what it's... It's the positive punishment that we all get confused as negative reinforcement one.
Yeah, Parker's thing, which is not, they don't talk about it properly, and we'll talk about that in a minute, is Milgram. And his, Travis Zilgram, his senior thesis is what this experiment is. He's also, besides being that and a giant douchebag, he is the president of the Order of the 206, which is a secret society / fraternity. That was started by physicians and Shakespearean scholars.
Well, I mean, you say Titus Andronicus, and I get interested.
You're like, ooh?
But if we're going to grind bones into dust, then I get interested for a different reason, mainly to keep you over there.
Yeah, you're like, no, that's cool.
Now, I don't want to talk about Much Ado instead. Okay, fine.
Well, I mean, then you're talking about eating hearts in the marketplace.
Well, sure, but
that sounds fun. Okay.
Okay.
You know, back in like the eating the rich, you know.
Absolutely.
So their nickname is the Dustmen, they call themselves. And they hold lots of powerful positions in the intelligence community, especially, and which is you know, where it's really close to the Skull and Bones Society.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that the case about Shivel was closed and then sealed with a like federal something in like within 72 hours.
I thought it was within 2 hours.
Oh, two?
Maybe I misheard. There were things going on in this house while I was trying to watch it. So,
I mean, either way, that's really, really fast. I think the case was closed immediately, but then like the federal thing took I mean, there's red tape, you know.
There's no way the federal government could do anything in 2 hours. Come now.
Exactly. And so they're like, okay, so someone really high up is protecting him. Who is it and why? And Sophie's like, well, why don't we just ask? And she whips out her phone.
And calls him.
And just calls him. Uses her real accent to begin with. And then Nate asks Hardison, have you ever been quail hunting?
Poor Hardison. Hardison's swear.
Like, look at me. Why would I ever go quail hunting?
I'm with him. And then Parker's really into it. And she's like, and then you have to beat the bush. And then a man with really good aim shoots the quail. And Hardison's like, why are you telling me such messed up things? And I'm like, I'm with you, Hardison. I'm with you.
I know. Two things. That talking about quail hunting just brings back flashbacks to Bambi. The quail and Bambi. Bambi like fucked me up as a kid.
It's not good. It's not good.
It's not. I had like
first movies I remember crying at.
Yeah, I had a horrible nightmare related to Bambi that I must have been 5 years old, and I remember it vividly. 30 years later.
Man.
The other thing is Elliot going, wait, I got this. Let me ask him a question. Have you ever played a video game? Quail hunting. And in the commentary, Beth Riesgraff is like, oh my God, we could not get through that scene because Christian was saying it slowly and loudly as if Aldous was deaf. Have you ever played a video game? So good. But basically, they're going to scare him, and then they're going to see where he flies and what he does. And before he gets the call, we see Travis talking to a suit in the, you know, the place where they're doing the experiment now, and he shows him that they've got these men in cells where they have the temperature down really, really low, and they're blaring, like, the flight
loud
of the
valley. Music.
Really yeah. Loud music. And he's telling him he's softening them up for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll give them to this guy to do whatever he's going to do with them. And just so callously. He's like, yeah, this guy's been awake for 72 hours. It's fine. You can have him in a minute. Oh. And Sophie calls and she tells him that she's a cop and she's got his case reopened and that he's going down. And right before she can drop an F-bomb, he, like, hangs up on her, which I love. And then, because this case is not actually reopened, they have to go find the actual case file. So they go to get the records, and they meet our new Bonanno, who's Detective Grayson, who's shown up before. She's great. And, you know, she tells them, you know, oh, they go, I love their cover here. Sophie is a
true crime writer.
And Elliot's like her agent. He's like, no, no, no. Don't sign that. Don't, unless it's a 4-6-figure deal. And Elliot, of course, tries to do his Christian Kane charm on her. And he's like, well, what if I want to get to know you? Like, could I get the, you know, the records in? Yeah. And she's like, if you know anybody who knows me, they tell you that you'd have better luck with her. and like John Rogers was really proud of this moment because he was like, yeah, like Elliot doesn't make a big deal about it. He's just like, oh, and Sophie's like, oh, and no one's like, oh my God, what? Or
no, everybody's very much okay then. That's interesting. Duly noted. Moving on.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like never, I don't know,
it's
normal as it should be. You know, except for the fact that she's like, I'm going to leave this file here and leave the room. Not normal.
No, not normal.
So they, you know, get to look at the file. And then Nate and Hardison are watching Travis from the bushes in like that's Nate's cute. In a suit, like they're in normal clothes. You can see Lucille in the background. I'm like, you're
not filthy.
Plain view. What? And then Hardison hears
Wumpa Wumpa
like,
Wumpa
Wumpa Wumpa sound. And Elliot's like, wait, what kind of Wumpa Wumpa?
What do you mean? It's a Wumpa Wumpa. How many Wumpa Wumpas are there? There are seven.
Seven.
And he's like, I don't know. Wumpa Wumpa Ting. You need to get out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you hear a Wumpa Wumpa, like, maybe you should go. Like,
I'm thinking.
I don't know if there's ever a good Wumpa Wumpa sound.
I don't think so.
But in this case, the Wumpa Wumpa is a helicopter flown by some CIA types who come out and talk to Travis. And they just know that this guy is trouble. He's high up because not a lot of people in the CIA warrant that kind of transportation these days. And Sophie mentions a contact at MI6 who's gone AWOL. So they, you know, can't ask them for help. And then Nate's like checking out Sophie, which I think is the only real beat of a relationship between Nate and Sophie in this episode at all.
It's
really like the only time they talk to each other now that I think about it.
I think that's the only time in their same room other than Hardison's speech at the beginning and then that scene.
And the gloat at the end.
Yeah, and the gloat.
Weird. So they, you know, they need to know who this guy is and why he's helping, you know, what he's doing for Zach. Not Zach, Travis.
Travis.
He's a cool Zach, though. He wears blazers with the collars popped and like, oh my God. So they need to get someone because they're like, what's the point of secret societies? And Elliot's like, to keep secrets.
And Sophie's like,
no.
To tell secrets.
Tell secrets. So we need someone for them to tell their secrets too. And that's going to be Hardison.
Absolutely.
Who gets to go to college and also gets to wear some very well-tailored preppy clothes.
Yes, indeed.
Which is normally not a thing for me, but it really works when Albus Hodge is wearing them.
Yes. Very nice. Yes.
He drops in on this game theory class that Nate gets to teach because Elliot drank
the professor
under the table.
It was great. It's like, Nate, it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And who's the enemy? And at that point, you're seeing Sophie pass Elliot aspirin. And then Nate walks in as the professor.
He's drinking raw eggs as well. And they said, and I know it cut away, but Christian actually drank those raw eggs.
Oh, dude. No.
It was so gross. And it was like five eggs in that glass. Yeah, and then it flashes back to Elliot, like, at a bar with, like, girls, and the professor just, like, drinking, and then he passes out. Yes. So good. And he's like, woo! And he's doing a shot and sucking a line. Yeah, so this is why Nate can be the nerdy, weedy professor.
From Holyoke, which I thought was a girls' college, but I must be wrong about that.
I thought so. I mean, it could be. And he just came over to visit.
It could be.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Parker is going over to the psych building to be a part of an experiment.
Oh, Parker.
If only they knew who they had. Like, the psych experiments you could do on Parker and the studies, the papers that could be written. Before we go into the experiment itself, I think in the original script, this episode was going to be a lot about like Parker and Hardison both going to college. Either of them did, and kind of experiencing this like moment in time that they didn't, they decided not to have, or they couldn't have for whatever reason. Parker can't people and probably never actually went to school. And Hardison just jumped right into, you know, stealing money from the Bank of Iceland. As one does. Gotta pay for Nana's hospital bills.
Right.
But then they like really didn't have time. So then it was more about Hardison But you can kind of see how that'd be interesting for Parker in a college scenario. I think that would be.
Yeah.
But Parker is, you know, she's in like preppy little clothes and she's a freshman. I mean the first year, but like looking at Beth Riesgraf, who is so beautiful, but like, she's not an 18-year-old. No. Be like, oh yeah, I'm a junior. Like, then okay, sure. And she's keeping an eye on the girl who's bringing her in, like keeping an eye on her elbow as she types in the security code. And can you already know
from that? Yeah.
You're like, oh, we don't even need a flashback to this. We know why she knows later. I guess we jump back to Nate and Travis before we actually go into her experiment, though.
This whole episode kind of goes back and forth, and in really good ways, but that's going to make it tough to discuss in a podcast. But it's really sewn together.
Yeah, some of, like, the cuts back and forth, like, paralleling different scenarios and, like, environments is so good, but it does make it a little confusing. So we do go back to this like library set, which is really beautiful. I really like it as this classroom setting, except they said there was no air conditioning and it was like super hot in there. And Nate chooses Travis to be his example of Prisoner's Dilemma because this is a game theory class. And which ironically enough is the scenario he's gonna find himself in later.
Imagine that.
Spoilers. And, you know, he sets him up like, you know, you've saying the exact same thing, like, you did something, someone died, it wasn't your fault, but you covered it up and you haven't been caught. And he's like, nope, that's a lie, you have been caught. And he's like, and you will be caught.
Like, it's just like him. All these little asides, and you will be punished.
Yes. You're gonna go down for this. And he's like, oh god. But he doesn't even look that nervous. Like, this kid is so self-assured and so self-centered that he's like, oh, no.
Slightly taken aback is about the best I could give him.
Yeah, like, I would have been like, I mean, I never would have thrown a dead body off a bridge, but I would have been, like, sick to my stomach and, like, pale as a sheet.
I'm so naive. I'm like, you figured me out. I confess, you know.
Oh, my God, how did you know? I'm gonna do that, and they're like, you didn't murder anybody. I'm like, oh, that's right. Okay,
are you sure? This would be me. Are you sure I didn't?
Maybe inadvertently. I don't know. A butterfly flapped its wings. I don't know. But as you know, Nate gets going on the whole Prisoner's Dilemma. Like, you can give up your compatriot who's in the other room for a lighter sentence. And he's like, no, I'm not a snitch. And he's like, well, the other guy is going to give you up. And the smart thing, the rational thing to do is to give them up first. So you get a lighter sentence. And then Hardison like jumps up, but I like before he jumps up and is like very confident and cool. Like he looks sick. Like he's like really nervous about what he has to do. You know, the way that I was every time I had to talk in class, like, oh, I'm going to raise my hand. But instead
more, I was a little more of a Hermione Granger over here.
Well, I mean, those are important. But he jumps up to ridicule the professor and say like, oh, do you not get peer-reviewed journals at Holyoke and like cite something? And then like,
Offsetter. I'm like, are we talking about the Big Bang Theory now? But no, I don't think we really
know. They might be talking about the Hofstadter that Leonard Hofstadter is named for.
Oh, well, that's true. That's true.
And then he just like leaves and Travis follows him as Nate tries to get control of the class again. And then I guess has to continue to teach this class for the rest of the period.
And probably enjoyed it. But, oh, yeah. I mean, Travis is, like, parked in a handicapped spot. I'm like, what a douche canoe.
Yeah. They're really good at just illustrating, like, the reasons why. Because he's a very attractive guy, and he's charming. And so you could be, like, after a while, like, oh, forget why he's so awful. And then you're like, oh, no, he parks in handicapped spots and then gets annoyed when he gets a ticket. But luckily Hardison's there and he gets his phone, he gets his license, and he does a dot matrix and a convoy and wipes it. And then I think this might be my favorite line of the episode. He's like, what are you like a genius or something? And Hardison says, maybe. And he's like, cool, I'm super rich.
like among other things, sure.
That's your superpower. Mine is that I'm super rich. Like, oh my gosh. And then he invites Hardison to a party at their farmhouse. Not their regular house, mind you.
But their farmhouse.
There's going to be drinks and hot chicks, and you should come.
When I was at UT, there was a frat called the Farmhouse. It did not look like what we're going to see later in this episode.
I imagine it probably looked a little more like Animal House.
It did look a little more like Animal House.
Oh, now we get to talk about Parker and her study. Which they say is for negative reinforcement, but that's not what negative reinforcement is.
Mm-mm, but it's a common thing.
Actually, what they're doing, yes. Yeah, it's very common because you think negative, like, oh, it's a bad reinforcement, but negative means no reinforcement, right? Like lack of a reinforcement. Positive, whether it's good or bad, is something you do because somebody else did something. But what they're doing is like a punishment.
A positive punishment is what it said. And I was like, okay. And then, of course, the whole thing reminds me of the scene in the original Ghostbusters. Bill Murray does that scene with the guy because he's trying to impress the young co-ed.
Yes. At the very beginning, right?
Yeah, at the very, very beginning.
Bill Murray. Yeah, the last time I watched Ghostbusters, like, that was the scene where I was like, oh.
He's an ass.
I don't like his character.
No.
Oh. And I didn't really get that we weren't supposed to really like him when I was a kid. No. And I was like, yeah, Bill Murray's funny.
In contrast, though, when she hands Parker the shocker, I was like, yes, hand Parker the shocker.
I was like, can you get a member of the 206 Society in here? Because Parker, yes, immediately shocks this man who
For no reason.
Well, she said, whenever he answers the question wrong, you hit the buzzer. And she's like, oh, like that. She's like, hmm. But she was also told that it's like a minor annoyance, slight pain, not really going to hurt him. In the actual experiment, it didn't hurt the people at all, I believe. It was fake just to see how easy it was for people to abuse that punishment when they had power. I believe. It's been a long time since my Psych 101 class.
And the only thing I know is Bill Murray from Ghostbusters. So
this is where we're coming from, everybody. please don't yell at us for getting anything wrong. But do you know that this is another experiment that never would get approved by an ethics board today?
Would not. Absolutely not.
So yeah, so Parker's like shocking this guy, partly because it's something Parker would just love to do, and partly because she needs to distract this young woman so she can steal her ID badge. She does, and then she gets thrown out, and she's yelling, like, take back the knife!
Attica!
Yes, and what is the other one she says is, soup is good food, which I was like, what? I had to look it up. There's like that's a Campbell Soup ad.
Oh.
Like, slogan, but also it's, Soup is Good Food was also the title of the opening song of the Dead Kennedys album, Frankenchrist.
Oh.
Which, I mean, either could be what this is referencing, honestly. Just basically, she's like, ah! And she immediately takes her new badge and pulls a jacket, a wig, and some glasses out of a bush.
Yeah, absolutely. Out of a bush.
Out of a bush, and then goes right back inside, and nobody recognizes her. Mostly because her skirt's so short, like, you can't see that she has anything on underneath this lab coat.
Yeah, I think that was part of the strategy.
Yeah. And as we saw earlier, she figured out the code to get in from the movement of the other woman's arms.
And immediately, she went downstairs, where she was not supposed to be. It's often restricted.
It's restricted.
The West Wing, if you will, of episode.
And when she gets downstairs, we see that this is where the entrance to the cells for the bad experiment is. And one of the guys from the 206 is there. And she's like, oh, hey. Oh, wait, I don't know you. But she's like flirting with him, but she's obviously out of her mind because she asks him like what his number is in football. And he says 42. She's like, 42. That's the number of days I've been off my meds.
And counting.
And then she steals a clipboard with their like manifest of their patients or their, I keep like wondering what I, I should refer to them. They're not patients. I call them like veterans for a while in my notes. Subjects maybe?
I guess subjects. I mean, because victim sounds.
I mean, they are.
They are victims.
Yeah, and subject sounds so, like, dehumanizing, too, though.
It really does.
Volunteers?
Those poor people who volunteered for more than they bargained for. But that's a long-winded way of saying it.
I think later I just call them the veterans, because they're all veterans.
They are all veterans, so.
So we'll just call them the veterans. And she steals their manifest. And Nate and Elliot are looking it over, and they see that all the people on it have the same address, and it's for a homeless shelter.
And this is where the parallels start going.
Yeah, they realize that they recruit from there. So Elliot's like, all right, well, Hardison goes to his, like, tea party or whatever, his sewing club. He's going to go do what he does, get invited to another club. And then, yeah, they cut between Hardison and Parker going to this garden party, and it's like all green lit and it's beautiful outside, and Elliot walking into this homeless shelter, and there's like, you know, some pretty like rough looking people. There's like people talking to themselves, and then it like goes back and forth between like some guy muttering to himself to this like girl like laughing inanely at something, and you're just like, whoa. And literally Elliot says, or Hardison says, whoa, and Elliot says, whoa, and it's just really good.
It was really well done.
Good job, Mark Roskin. Good job directing. And even though literally what Elliot is doing is much scarier than what Hardison is doing, Hardison is having a lot more confidence issues.
Well, I mean, Hardison is out of his element, so in that way it's just as terrifying for him. In fact, probably more so than Elliot, because Elliot's like, yeah, I can beat you up. It's not really a problem.
That's true. And even though Hardison has biceps for days, he doesn't really beat people up too often. And that's not his role right now. He's got to be himself, but cooler.
Yes, and he's like, you can't really fake cool.
Yeah, you can't fake cool. And Parker does her best to give him like a little pep talk. And she's like, hey, you remember when you were like playing with your imaginary friend? They're real.
And then the thing, and then there was the deal, and that was cool.
None of these guys have ever done the thing with the magic and killed the guy.
It was so good. And Sophie's like, did it work? And Hardison's like, no, but the fact that she thought it would work meant it worked.
And I love when they say things like that to like just one person, but you know everybody in the comms can hear.
Yeah.
Parker's like, oh, she's so cute. So Elliot, you know, is at the homeless shelter, and he sits down, and this guy's like mean to him for a minute, and then he makes friends in his Elliot way by
almost whipping his arm out of its socket.
Yeah, he's like, don't touch me, I just got back from Iraq, and you know, I saw things over there, and I'm crazy, blah blah blah. And then, you know, that is definitely the way to make friends, because this guy's like, ah, you're Army, right? Green Beret. I was in the Marines.
Semper Fi.
And Elliot has this great line where he's like, the other guy says, they didn't tell you that the promise didn't go both ways when you like promise yourself to this country. And Elliot says, if this country was known for keeping its promises, we wouldn't need Marines. And you're just like, oh, yep.
This is what the wrestling fans were in our house. We would do the do-do-do-do. And then John Cena, you can't see me anyway.
That's great. I'm so glad we were talking about wrestling earlier. So I'm like, okay, wrestling. Sure. I particularly love Hardison gets in good with all of the dustmen by wiping their criminal records.
Yeah, my favorite was no more jaywalking, you reckless son of a bitch.
And that guy like walks away and he's got like a short sleeve pull like button down shirt. Like, what? I did appreciate that the dustmen are a pretty diverse group. Mm-hmm. It's not just white assholes, it's like all kinds of white of assholes. I thought that was a little nice. But they also give him
no women, even though the Skull and Bones allowed women in 1992.
That's true. No women.
Anyway.
Hardison gets a new nickname. They call him HP because he's like a wizard.
Harry Potter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We skipped over the part where Parker like goes off on her like, a guy can get all over a girl, like just out of nowhere. But she gives him an excuse for not mingling yet, because she wants to be all over him. And that makes me a slut. Well, whatever. And then she kisses him, and then it turns into like a real kiss. And Hardison's all flustered afterward. He's like chugging his wine. That's so good. I love him so much. Meanwhile, Ellie gets into the study like immediately. I think he finished his lunch and then climbs into a creepy unmarked van.
Well, it was another great parallel moment, because Hardison gets the little token with the 206 and he's like, I'm in. And Elliot's in the van. I'm in. I was like, nice. I like it.
This is good work. Good work, boys. They get the explanation of the study, like they're going to get 3 squares a day. They get $50 a day until the study's over. But if you leave early, you don't get the money. And then they like immediately put them into these cells and start. And they like, Elliot takes his time walking in and they shove him in. And then they like start blasting
you. So much restraint on his part. You're like, dude, you don't know what you're doing pushing Elliot.
I know every time he gets up and he walks, like, it's just this, like, super controlled, like, just barely reined in violence that you could just feel radiating off of him. And I'm just like, are all of you stupid? Do you have no situational awareness? Like, I mean, where are your survival instincts?
I know that this is dramatic irony because I know how this is going to end up for you, but...
But really, it's on you if you cannot read these signs. And that's his version of hazing. Hardison gets to do his own hazing, which is all of the boys have to take off their clothes and run around a college campus and memorize a plaque. And it's very nice.
And it's all juxtaposed with what's happening, mm-hmm. what's happening to Hardison, what's happening to Elliot. Two different types of torture.
Yeah. At the beginning, okay, so if you've ever listened to the commentary of an episode of Leverage, whenever Aldous Hodge is on, he refers to himself as sexual chocolate.
Oh my God.
By the way, there's
a wrestler who also called himself sexual chocolate, just in keeping with the wrestling theme.
Oh my gosh, wrestling.
The unintentional wrestling theme. Yes, Mark Henry, but carry on.
Right. I wonder if it's a reference. Chocolate. I don't know. But at the beginning of this episode, he's like, oh, I'm not going to call myself sexual chocolate yet. But then when he like is running across campus with just his boxers, he goes, sexual chocolate. He's like, man is a dork. I love him. But he pointed out that the college that this is set in Boston, but they obviously filmed in Portland. At Reed College, which is where
Steve Jobs went.
Thank you. I was like, I want to say Steve Jobs, but I might be wrong. Yeah, where Steve Jobs went.
I'm like, oh wait, I read that earlier today.
Good job. I did too and then forgot. But so they filmed there because Portland lets them film anywhere. But the college was still open, so he was like running around this campus with no clothes on, and there were actual people out and about going to class.
I mean, it's a college campus. They're like, at least they're wearing boxers. Carry on.
That's true. Like, that's normal. I mean, the cameras running along behind them or on a dolly in front of them is a little different, but that's okay. Yeah, so back in Elliot's situation, the suit that we saw earlier gets Elliot and brings him out of his cell. And basically, we find out that he wants to interrogate Elliot and try to break him. So he gives him word.
The word potato, which of course reminded me of Dan Quayle, but that's neither here nor there.
Like, reminds you of the potato job? The hot potato job? It's like, but is it really a diamond? Like, I don't understand. And yeah, he's like, don't tell me this until I get it out of you. And then he's, you know, Elliot's like, well, when are we going to start? And he was like, we started the minute you walked in here. Aren't you paying attention? And then like,
you're a leak. I'm going to tear you apart. Elliot's like, so we start tomorrow.
Yes, we start tomorrow. And he's like, ooh. But honestly, like, I don't think, going back to us earlier saying, oh no, I committed a murder when I hadn't, like, I don't think that guy would intimidate me. Like, if he'd yelled at me like that, I'd been like, why are you saying that? What are you talking about? Who are you?
I don't know. I just been like, it's potato, bitches. I'm out of here. I don't.
I mean, I didn't get the $150, Sally. Come on.
You know, some things just aren't worth the money. But then again, I'm not homeless, so.
That's true.
Thank the Lord. Yeah. Knock on some wood. There's still time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Elliot, there before the grace of God, right? Elliot says, Elliot's friend at the beginning when they're signing their little contracts, he's like, they had me at 3 square meals. So like, he's like, I don't even like, the money's great, but it's the food that's most important to me. And then they like shove him back in his cell and, you know, he's like, Nate, they're not trying to cure PTSD. They're finding out new ways to break prisoners and they're trying to give people PTSD.
And then they turn up the music. And then I had my Silence of the Lambs moment. Because I wrote in my notes, he gets the music again. And then I was like, which reminds me of it puts on the lotion or it gets the hose again. And that's just where my brain goes.
Oh, quarantine. Oh, man. A couple things, like little tidbits of trivia. So on the wall, spray painted like behind him in that scene, it says, let me go. Which, I mean, obviously something you would see in a cell like this, but is also a reference to one of Christian Kane's songs from his album. And he's wearing the number 7, which is a reference to another one of his songs and like rule number 7
in the song. I mainly remember the house rules. That's the main Christian Kane song I remember.
Yes. It's from that song, like rule number 7 is like, you don't touch the ladies, but they can grab whatever they want.
Yes.
Which sounds nice on the surface, but then is like not great. And I looked it up and I read some, like a live journal, somebody's live journal where they were like calling out other fans who like took that literally and like somebody grabbed Christian Kane. They were like, we are not those kinds of fans. And they were like, that is not okay. You do not ever touch someone without their consent. And I was like, yes, you tell them.
That's right. It's figurative. It's figurative, people.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, poor Christian. Yeah. So I thought that was a little fun, a little bit of trivia, except for the Christian Kane being harassed. Hardison continues to impress the dustman by like, you know, talking about wine with Sophie's help.
It's fruity.
It's strong. And they're all like,
yeah. As somebody who's been on a lot of wine tastings, a lot of that is you know,
yeah,
for show fun. Anyway.
Yeah. And like those other frat boys don't know anything. They're like, oh, yeah. It's nice.
Pecan. Like, no, you're all eating. You're all drinking Natty Light. Don't lie to me.
Yeah. Yeah, you have like Goldschläger somewhere in the back. It's fine. Whatever. And then Elliot, you know, he's trying to like help out one of his fellow veterans. And because he's like passing out and they're like, no judging. and he has to let himself get tased.
He grabs the taser,
and then he's like, nah, fine.
Exactly, because the guy's got the taser, and he realizes, he's like, I can't let this guy know that there's no way he's going to tase me. I'm just going to have to be tased. Dag, no, but eyes roll. It's fine.
The eyes roll on purpose, and then the eyes roll because he's been knocked out. Oh, it's good. And then it like cuts to the suit interrogating Elliot some more and asking him like how many people he's killed, if he's ever counted, and just like trying to get to him. And Elliot, I wrote, Elliot turns on his ultra scary and like just like, it's like the quiet talking, like sustained eye contact, like, do you want me to tell you like what color their eyes were, like what food was on their breath, the like all this stuff. And he's like, yeah,
which ones deserved it, which ones didn't deserve it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't need to know how many because I know all of them or something. And the guy's just like, okay, we're done, you can go. You win. I'm gonna go home now. And we learn that Mr. Conrad is the name of the CIA guy who's protecting Zilgrim. A fact that like Hardison has learned by just being a recruit, like just going through hazing. They've bragged about Mr. Conrad already. So what they have to do is they need to convince him that Travis isn't worth protecting anymore. And Hardison's like says something like, oh, the dustmen run bone deep. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. This rush week is torture.
Elliot chattering in 20 degree weather.
And he's like, what's that noise?
That's my teeth chattering.
But by all means, go on. He's like, and then I also love that, you know, Parker had to give Hardison a pep talk. Sophie had to walk him through a bunch of stuff. But finally, he gets to use his own skills to impress the guys in the society because they need someone to play Black Ops.
He's like, I dabble.
He's like, he just slowly stands up. When that guy just runs in, and you're like, Black Ops! Black Ops! And it took me a minute to be like, oh, the video game. Are you having a seizure? They just like two random words. What's that scene in National Treasure where they're with the bad guys and like one of the henchmen says something weird and like Riley's like, oh, are we just saying random words now? Scuba diver! Elephant! Yeah. And yeah, Hardison even has like a cigar. Like he's just like really living it up.
He's living his best life there.
Yeah. And then we see, they cut a scene here for time, but we see Parker. Oh no, it cuts. Okay, sorry. Never mind. So his Black Ops thing cuts back and forth again with something with the other study. And Parker has broken in and she's giving coats to all the guys in the cells.
And I have to admit, I'm like, oh, she's giving them coats. That's so sweet. But there's a little more to it. Just put a pin in it.
Because there always is.
There always is.
But I also love, I love that they like look at her and they're like, is this really happening? And they're like, it doesn't matter. Like, I could be hallucinating. And there's like an angel, whatever. And they just like try to go back to sleep. And, you know, we get another scene of an interrogation where the guy tries to get Elliot to touch a glass of water. And at the end, he's like, aren't you thirsty? And Elliot's like, yeah. And he just gets up and walks out. What?
Oh, I was like, he just gets up and walks out.
He's like, yep. Yeah, you're right. He just like, just walks out. And the dustman's like, do you want me to dust this for Prince? And he's like, no, he didn't touch it. And he goes, oh, should I dust this for Prince? And it's the taser, which this guy, I guess, has like not touched since then.
Yeah, I thought that was like a weak link because I'm like, you know, he's touched that. He's tased people.
Yeah.
their fingerprints all over that.
Buddies for fun, you know.
Yeah, he's passed it off to somebody else who's used it. I mean, but whatever. Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, maybe they could like isolate, like this is a fingerprint that's not mine. I don't know.
Well, I mean, they could definitely compare his fingerprints and which ones weren't his, but
yeah. Oh, then we see Parker has done Hardison's homework for a class that he dropped.
The essay on the history of cross-stitching, yes.
I would like to read it. but she tears it up, so we'll never know what it was about.
No.
And he's like, Parker, you know, I don't really go to school here, right? But he, like, actually is studying in the next scene.
Yes.
He's studying in several scenes. But yeah, she's a little annoyed with him.
Rightfully so. She wrote a paper for him.
She's right. Like,
and you dropped this class after you asked me to write this paper for you?
Mm-hmm. There was a cut scene where, like, I think it was with Parker and Sophie, who also really don't talk in this episode, where she was doing his homework, and I think they talk about it, but I don't know what they said because it was deleted. And they successfully pulled Elliot's fingerprint, and Travis gets to see Elliot's CIA file, including, because they're not sure if he's still active or not. They're like, he's one tough egg to crack, but I don't know if he's, you know, still active. And he looks at his known associates, and there's a big little beautiful picture of Hardison. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, we know he's active. And you're like, oh shit. And Hardison is back in his dorm room studying for some reason, and he can't focus. He takes out his earbud to call Parker, who doesn't answer right away, and he leaves her a little voicemail saying, hey Parker, it's Hardison. Like, she knows who she is, and her phone tells her who you are. Maybe don't blow your cover in a dorm room where the door is open.
Hey, and don't take off your earbud. This is me. He takes out the earbud. I'm like, no, nothing good ever comes of taking out your earbud.
Ever. But as he's trying to get in touch with her, Travis shows up, and he like comes in and he like closes the door and he like has an envelope, and you know, Harris is like, oh, am I in? And he's like, I don't know, let's see. He's not. Spoiler. Inside is the CIA file with Hardison's picture, which I guess is not Elliot's file. It's Hardison's file because it looks like it's more just on him. And he like looks up, and Travis has a gun and a black bag
to put over your head. Nothing good ever comes of that either.
Ever. And Parker shows up a few minutes later
waving
a little white handkerchief, which was I think was ad-libbed by Beth Riesgraf. Like, Parker needs to do something. Like, she knows, like, she's not quite sure why she was upset, but she knows that she needs to do something to kind of like,
well, plus he had called, and then she tried to call him back and he didn't answer, so
yeah. And so they, you know, she finds the file on the ground and says, you know, this is up, this is what's up. And Elliot, they're just bringing him in to be interrogated again. And they find out that Hardison disappeared about 10 minutes ago. They need, and Elliot's immediately like ready to go. And he's like, give me 5 minutes. And the guy's like, 5 minutes? Because he's just hearing Elliot's side of the conversation. And he's like, oh, we're going to do things differently today.
To prove that your theory that torture doesn't work.
Yes. And yeah, he got it in like -2 minutes basically. Mm-hmm. And like, you just hear like all the banging, and you see the other guys are watching from their cells, and he's like, I know where he is. And then he lets
everybody out.
What?
And then he lets everybody out.
Let's everybody out. They're like, it's about time. Like, there's literally like 2 seconds. Chill. So the Travis has taken Hardison back to the library and like tosses him up on a table. And then he leaves and tells them to wait for whatever the guy who is the suit, like he's going to come and take care of it. And then he leaves for the fancy party where everyone becomes a dustman. And while he's there, the police come in and break up the party because he's talking with Mr. Conrad. He's like, oh, what did you need to tell me? And he was like, oh, the other guy has it taken care of, but I'll talk to you about it later.
Mm-hmm.
And the police come in with a warrant for his arrest. And he's like, excuse me, I have to go. And he tries to sneak out the back door. But Detective Grayson is there. And so is Sophie. And they cuff him and take him away. And I love how, like, smug Sophie looks here. It's just a very good look on her.
Well, and Grayson, too. Why are you doing this? For the fun of it?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, so fun. And he's like, my dad's going to get me out of here in, like, 5 minutes. Whatever. She even, like, grabs his hair.
Yeah.
Which is important later, and we'll talk about it in a minute. And back in the library, the dustmen, just for no reason, are like, oh, we're going to beat the shit out of Hardison. With like a stick first, and then they're like kicking him and punching him on the ground, and he's like crouched, and like it's really scary.
It is. I mean, he gets in some good licks, but there are more of them than him, so.
Yeah. And Parker comes in and like beats everybody up with a chair, which is great. And they're leaving, and they're like, oh, you'll never be a dustman, you'll never be anything, you're just a geek. And I love Parker's like, should I tell them that's the age of the geek? And Hardison's like, no, they'll figure it out eventually. And then she kicks the guy in the face,
which was
awesome. And in the commentary, Beth Buskirk was like, that scene was really, really tense and like really scary to shoot. And they're like, well, you think like watching an unarmed black man be beaten by white guys?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah. And it was really hot in there. I'm sure only added to like the tension and the like feeling of discomfort you would have. But yeah, that would be scary. Meanwhile, Zach wakes up in an interrogation room and
You mean Travis?
Yes, I wrote Zach again.
You're gonna change his name before all is said and done.
No. Oh, this is like the Mandela effect. Are you sure Sam was in Zach? Travis wakes up in an interrogation room, and Sophie and Detective Grayson come in, and they show him footage that they have gotten of him and the dustmen like abusing the veterans, which we haven't seen up until now. Like, we saw the loud music, we saw the cold, like that we saw them pushing Elliot around. And I mean, they had a taser on them, but like we hadn't actually seen them punch anybody. They're like punching and kicking and just like running into the room and doing it. And he's like, oh, well, he's like, how did you get that? And we get a flashback to there's little pin cameras on the jackets.
On the jackets Parker brought.
So really she's helping them in multiple ways. But he's not scared because he's got friends in high places. Like, he's like, you don't even know. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to be out of here in 2 seconds.
Although, Seth did crack me up referring to them as the dust bunnies.
Dust bunnies. And Detective Grayson's like, dustman. She's like, whatever. And, you know, he's like, oh, I have friends in high places. And they're like, oh, you mean you're Mr. Conrad? And then you see him being escorted down the hallway by one of the cops, and she's like, oh yeah, we got him too. He's been arrested for a lot of things, and unless he starts handing people over, he's gonna get into a lot more trouble than you. So you know, you might want to think about like giving him up first. And then we get a flashback to the prisoner's dilemma,
which is a nice bookend. Love bookend.
Yeah. And he of course breaks immediately. He's like, I have recordings of every conversation I've ever had with him. I'll give him up. Like, just let me out. And they're like, okay, well, we'll go talk to our boss and you stay here. And then Detective Grayson like unlocks his cuffs. She's like, as a sign of good faith. And then they like make him wait. And in the commentary, they were like, this is a kid who has never had to wait for anything he wanted in his life, mm-hmm. ever. And so having the indignity of sitting in this room for, like, in my head, I'm like, he's in there for 5 minutes. Like, he's not even waiting.
Yeah.
He's like walking around. He's like, I want to call my dad. Hello, I'm in here.
Like, good for you.
Reflective glass. And finally, he goes over and he tries the door knob, and it's unlocked. And so he's like, oh, I'm out of here. I'm going to make a break for it.
Mm-hmm.
And when he walks out, after his eyes adjust, he realizes he's on campus. He's in the psych building. Station.
He was not in a police station.
So good. And then we get the flashback to Soapy drugging him, which is why he wakes up in the interrogation room, which you don't even, like, the first time you watch it, you don't even question the fact that he was asleep.
No.
You're just like, oh, maybe they kept him in here overnight. Like, it's daytime now. But then you're like, oh, no, that is weird that he was asleep. Huh. But yeah, they used a technique that the Apollo Robinson, they're like resident thief expert, they get tips from, taught them about like misdirecting like somebody's senses. So if you're doing something to some other part of their body, they're not going to feel something else. So because he's having the cuffs put on and she grabs his hair, he doesn't feel Sophie puncturing him with the needle. In like the meat of his hand.
Although I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, I would have felt that.
Not if you didn't know it was gonna happen. I don't know. And then the cops, we also see Elliot and all of the vets turning this psychology test lab into the interrogation room, like putting up different walls and all this stuff. And
the foil on the door and everything. Yeah.
And the best part is they're like, how's it look? And Detective Grayson throws her cup of coffee on the wall. And she's like, perfect. now the cops show up for real to arrest him in front of everyone. And we get the smirk from the gloat from the team. And then they walk down the bridge that I'm pretty sure is where they threw the guy's body off of. and you know, Nate's like, they just had to scare him into making the rational decision, you know, to give up Mr. Conrad. Mm-hmm. And then we see a flashback of Hardison like stumbling in with like a bloody token of being a dust man, mm-hmm. and you know, saying, somebody didn't want me to tell you this. And they brought him in so that he could watch through the glass as
Travis loses it.
Just immediately gives him up, just immediately turns on him. And which is not really something you want if like someone's gonna go into like the intelligence.
No.
Their business.
No.
So, you know, Mr. Conrad's like, all right, what do you want? And Nate says, I just want you to withdraw your protection and let the system do its job so that he is punished for the death of David Scheibel. And Mr. Conrad's like, okay. And he leaves. And I love how they shot the scene because you can see their reflections in the mirror, mm-hmm. and or the window. And like you can see them and like the backside of the scene that we'd already seen of Sophie and them. Just really good. And then him coming up and like when he's looking through the window or the mirror going, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Nate's just like, prisoner's dilemma. And yeah, then walked out. And then our last scene, Nate is on the phone with Mr. Conrad, hearing the results of the court case, even though the jury hasn't actually come back yet. And David Scheibel's daughter is there and she hears it too. And she's like, thank you. And she leaves. And Mr. Conrad's like, well, I hope it's worth it, you know, attracting my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate hangs up and like he and Elliot do a shot together, and they never have the last scene of the show together, like ever. And Nate says, here we go. And they kind of like cheers, and then it fades to black because this is the second half of the season. This is probably the last episode where there's not something dealing with the overarching, the big mythology of the season. So things are about to start happening real fast. And like, woo, and then do-do-do-do-do-do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for my observation, such as?
Yes. Tell me your thoughts.
Okay. So it just so happens that my favorite line from Veronica Mars comes from an episode where Logan and Wallace are doing a version of the Stanford prison guard experiment, and they're doing the music and everything. And finally, Logan goes, okay, fine. I'll tell you. Because the song that they've been playing to torture them is the Pina Colada song. Why? I'll tell you. I do like Pina Coladas. And I do like getting caught in the rain. So of course, if you're going to have the Stanford prison guard experiment, this is the first thing I think of. So I go back to look up that episode. And in the same episode where that's happening, Veronica Mars is infiltrating a sorority. The episode is called My Big Fat Greek Rush Week.
Yes.
And it aired back in 2006.
That's weird to me that Veronica Mars predates Leverage, but of course it did.
Like, yeah, I know. It's really weird. But I was like, what are the odds that you would have two episodes of two television shows that combine the Stanford prison guard experiment and a sorority fraternity?
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, the Stanford prison guard experiment, like, happened at a university, at a college, mm-hmm. Stanford. But to use up both of those things in one go, cite your sources, M. Scott Beach. Cite your sources.
They're both excellent episodes.
Both obviously two of my favorite shows. I mean, not obviously, I haven't really talked about Veronica Mars, but I feel very strongly about Veronica Mars. Anyways, okay. Any more thoughts about the episode? I'm just going to cut all of them.
That was my one main observation that I've shared with you.
I like that one. I don't think there's anything else that I left out. I mean, there's always good little tidbits in the commentary that you should read. And I also, like, we kind of skimmed over what game theory and, like, the prisoner's dilemma is. I don't find that interesting at all. So
it's there's psychology. A lot of really- You can yeah, Google.
Exactly. You can Google. There's a lot of things. Actually, on the Leverage Wiki, there's a lot of really, really good stuff on there. All right. You said you didn't have a heist slate, or do you have a heist slate?
I'm gonna pass on the heist today. I'll have to do better next time.
That's okay. All right, Charlie, can you move so I can look at the heist slate? You're not sitting in a way where I can set my laptop on top of you and use you as a lap. Desk.
Cat's got a cat.
Come on. Okay, so for my heist light, I wanted to see if there were any secret society heists. First of all, I mean, gotta be a shout out to Allie Carter's Heist Society.
True.
It's one of the best pun titles ever. She's really good at pun titles, and they're just really good books. So, but I found it's not a heist, but it's a con about a secret society that will help you attain wealth and power at a cost. And this is an article in the LA Times from 2016, so pretty recent. I just want to, like, read the very beginning. The 10-page recruitment letter recently sent to Charles Snook made clear that he was wanted by a mysterious and elite organization called The League. We know a great deal about you, the letter said. You'd be surprised at how much we know. Man, the like syntax of that sentence sounds familiar. The league hadn't reached out before, it said, because Snook wasn't ready to learn all that the league could teach him about attaining wealth and power. Uh-huh. That's changed. You're no longer judgmental or negative, the letter said. You're no longer feeling sorry for yourself. He's also no longer alive. Snook died in a Pennsylvania nursing home almost a year ago at the age of 98. So this is just this very old-fashioned con of, like, this is a 10-page recruitment letter that they send out to, like, get people to buy into this secret society, which, you know, goes around all the time. So if you want to read more about it, it's in the LA Times, and I'll put the link in the thing.
Excellent.
So, yeah, if a secret society sends you a letter, it's not a secret society. It's not real. Don't believe it. Protect your money. Protect yourself.
Please.
It's wild. It's wild. Another con that I just heard about this morning is that people are apparently stealing unemployment benefits from people who are still working. They are like stealing Social Security numbers and applying for unemployment benefits, and then the people who, you know, they're getting in their name are getting notified of it, and they're like getting a hold of unemployment, being like, hey, I still have a job. This isn't me. I don't know what's going on. Apparently, this state of Washington has been hit really hard with it. And they've sort of traced it back to some Nigerian con artists.
Is it a prince?
I think it might be a prince. Think he just needs you to send him some money and he'll pay you back a lot. Some of that unemployment money. Yeah, so be careful out there, everybody.
I know Mr. Rogers told us to look for the helpers, but when something like this happens, you gotta look for the scammers too.
Mm-hmm. Jeez Louise. Okay, well, Sally, tell everyone where they can find you on the internet.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SuperWriterMom. You can find me on Facebook, also at SuperWriterMom, and Instagram at SuperWriterMom, or at SallyKilpatrick.com, a website that I need to revamp.
And I'm, as always, on Twitter at LibrarianC. And you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks when we talk about The Office Job with my good friend Jen. Hopefully, Jen is a nurse in Colorado, and right now nurses are a little busy. This week, I think she's taking a little vacation break, so hopefully she'll be able to join us. But if not, somebody will come on and talk about The Office Job. I'm sure I wouldn't have to twist anybody's arm to talk about that episode.
No.
It is so good. Yeah. Sally, thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you for having me.
The time out of your revisions to join us.
Yeah, it's about that time. I've got it penciled in, don't worry.
And you were ready like months and months ago to record your episode for next year.
Yes, that was by accident. Again, I believe at some point, I don't know if it's going to make the recording or not, but earlier we talked about how time has no meaning.
No meaning.
Absolutely not. I put it in the calendar for 2021.
Yes. Well, you know, I was telling someone that story when we were texting about setting this up, and I was like, honestly, it's my fault because I have never planned anything this far in advance. And I was like, I have the last two seasons, like, these are the dates we should record. These are the dates that should come out. Who wants to sign up? And my longtime friend and coworker was like, you did what? Like, you don't know what you're doing for story time until the day of a story time that you're doing, that you're recording and putting out on the internet. Like, I know. I was possessed by, you know.
Every now and then we need to shake things up.
Yeah.
Try something new.
Sally, We haven't talked about the reboot.
Oh, no, we have not talked about the reboot. Yes. I didn't realize I'd be the first person
in the episode. But after. I want to hear everybody's reaction. So I've actually had two people on, but everybody has had, like, different thoughts and, like, different things that they've brought forward. So tell me your thoughts. What are you thinking? What are your hopes and dreams?
I am excited about the reboot. Kind of concerned about some things, but I'm kind of a let's let it ride and let's see what happens. And here's hoping, knock on wood, it'll be just as good.
Yes.
I mean, there was a time we needed more Eat the Rich storylines.
It's now. It's now. Yeah. And everyone on here has heard it before. Like, I'm excited. I think this is the only way, like, iteration that I'd be, like, actually genuinely excited for the reboot, with, like, the cast change up the way that it was.
Wait, who did they add again?
Noah Wiley.
Okay, I started to say it's Noah Wiley, right?
Yeah. So then the Noah Wiley, I'm like, eh, but the dropping Timothy Hutton, I'm happy about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All things considered.
Mm-hmm. So I think I've been asking people, like, who do you think Noah Wiley's going to play? Like, what kind of character? Is he going to be part of the team? Is he going to be the big bad? Is he going to be a new Sterling? Need another team?
That is a good question. I have no idea. I mean, I think a lot of people would think
from the librarian.
I mean, he can't walk in and be the mastermind. That's not acceptable.
Is he Sophie's new lover who doesn't know what she about her past?
No, I don't think so. My money would be on a Sterling character or a character like Jerry Hall.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Ryan?
Jerry Ryan. There we go. Not Jerry Hall. Different Jerry. What am I thinking?
I was like, that would be cool. I was trying to remember in this episode when Sophie mentions her MI6 contact, if that comes in later, or if that's just
I want to say yes, but it's been a long time.
Okay. We're all watching, listeners, we're all watching this as if we've never seen it before. Everything's exciting.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
My mind is just, yeah, I don't remember television for some crazy reason. Until it happens again. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, until it's about to happen. I'm like, oh, that's right. Oh. Which is lovely.
It means I get to rediscover it again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing's boring.
You know, I mean, if I wait another 5 years, I can watch Miss Fisher again. And it'll be all, you know, that'll all be brand new to you.